Today is Friday, March 22nd, 2020. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Esther Litton. That's Esther Litton. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Esther. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Great. This is a phone interview. May we have your permission to record this interview over the phone?
Yes, you do have my permission.
Thank you. Esther, what year were you born?
Well, I was born in 1919. November 18th of 1919.
And what can you tell me about your grandparents?
Well, my grandparents, both of them, were born and raised and educated in Mexico City. Their antecedents had come originally from Spain many generations before.
Wow.
So they really didn't have any connections or allegiance to Spain. They considered themselves Mexican, and Mexican citizens.
Okay.
They were married, I think, in the 1880s. They had four children, two daughters and two sons. My mother was the oldest of the four. She had a younger sister and two younger brothers. But in 1910, my grandfather was appointed the Mexican consul in Los Angeles, California.
Oh, wow.
So they made their way to Los Angeles. Nobody spoke any English, and my grandparents never learned English. They thought it was impossible. But, of course, the others, my mother and the other children, sisters and brothers, did learn English. But in 1910, they established a home in Los Angeles in an area called Westlake Park, which was not in the exact middle of Los Angeles. It was not exactly suburbs because it was well-developed, but there was an artificial lake which was called Westlake.
Okay.
It was a shallow lake, and there was a nice park there. So that was the area where they settled. So in 1910, my grandfather was sent from Los Angeles to Salt Lake City for a year, and he came back to Los Angeles, and then he was sent to Vancouver, British Columbia. So he had several different sightings. But in 1911, Pancho Villa and Zapata started the Peasants' People's Revolution.
Right.
And so as it grew, my grandmother was more and more reluctant to go back to Mexico because the trains were being stopped and robbed and burned, although relatives in Mexico City insisted that it was just a gang of peasants, not to worry about them. But my grandmother reluctantly did not, she was afraid to go back. So by 1913-14, the revolution had upset the presidency of President Porfirio Diaz, and he was out, and Zapata was in, and my grandfather no longer had the posting. So it depended on my mother and the other children to get jobs. My mother had been a reluctant person to come to Mexico, to come to California, because before they left, she was a wonderful pianist.
Oh, wow.
And had been given a scholarship to the Conservatory of Music to continue her piano studies. So it was not a happy time for her to come to the United States.
Mm.
They did rent a piano so she could keep on playing. But then when she went to work in one of the department stores to teach women how to knit and sew and crochet and embroider, that was her marketable skill.
Oh, wow.
So in the the neighborhood, the boys went on to high school and all, and they learned English very quickly, and so did my mother's younger sister, and so did my mother.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had excellent command of English, the grammar and the pronunciation and everything. She was very adept.
Nice.
But then in 14, one of the neighbor young men was lived in the neighborhood, and it was my father's family. He was not Latin. He was American. And in 1917 or 1918, my mother was about 25, and my father was a couple of years younger, but they got married, and of course World War One broke out, and he was stationed in Fort Lewis in Washington State. And they went up together. She rented a room in a house, but then the war ended in 1918, and they returned to California when my mother was pregnant. And in November 18, 1919, I was born.
So hang on, Esther, can we go back to your grandfather and grandmother for a minute?
Yes.
What were their names?
Oh, my grandmother was Delfina Pradillo, her maiden name, Delfina Pradillo.
Can you spell Pradillo, please?
P-R-A-D-I-L-L-O.
Okay.
There were many other names in between, you know how they do.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And your grandfather?
My grandfather's name was Jose Lozano, L-O-Z-A-N-O.
And I just want to ask, how old was your grandfather when the presidency changed in 1913-14 in Mexico?
I think he was about 40.
And what did he do? I mean, he was suddenly out of a job.
Yes, well, that was when my mother stepped in and started working, and probably the boys, her brothers, found some work. And that's a good question because I really can't tell what they did.
Okay.
But I do remember the house where we lived, and I remember a horse-drawn cart run by a Chinaman. It was a vegetable cart where my mother would buy the vegetables. And one day, when I was about three, the Chinaman asked if I would like a ride on the buckboard. So my mother let me ride just a few feet. And that was it. That's one thing I do remember about that area. But to go on.
Well, can we talk a little bit about your growing up? Well, let's see. Thinking about your parents then.
Well, I did want to explain about my birth because at that time obstetrics was not as capable as they are now, and my mother had a very difficult birth. She was in labor for 2 days.
Wow.
And the doctor said the only way he could save her and the child was to perform a cesarean operation, which was very dangerous at the time.
Yes.
But he said that was all he could do. So he did perform the cesarean, but something went wrong because she had a very bad infection for 3 months.
Yes.
And so my grandmother and my aunt took care of her and me until she recovered. But my father got a job at the Southern California Music Company in Los Angeles, where he was a bookkeeper, and I think his pay was $9 a week. And
Esther, what was the name of your mom?
Sara, S-A-R-A.
And her last name?
Yeah, and her married name was Clewett, C-L-E-W-E-T-T-E.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your father's first name?
Roger.
Roger, okay.
Mm-hmm. And his family had come from Nebraska, someplace like that. They were essentially farming people.
Did he get some schooling then before the war or in the war for bookkeeping?
No, he got the job after the war.
Okay, so he learned about bookkeeping after the war then?
I think that must be maybe. I really don't know how he learned it, but
okay.
It was not a very big job or challenging job.
Okay. And your mom and your mom and dad then wanted to stay in Los Angeles after the war because your mom's folks and brothers and sister were there?
Yes, and my grandparents, they moved in with my grandparents in the house they had.
Okay.
And my father went to work in Los Angeles at the music company, and my mother, when she was well enough, after I was about three or so, she found that there was work to be done for the studios, the movie studios. Cecil B. DeMille had a studio. There were three studios in Culver City, which was a long way from where they lived in Westlake Park. But my mother found temporary work off and on in Culver City, and it looked like it might materialize into something more permanent. So the family moved to Culver City to a rented house, which was just a block away. And my mother started working off and on and more steadily, first at Cecil B. DeMille studio, where she worked with a designer named Adrian. And when Adrian, it was around 1926, and when Adrian moved to MGM, he was hired by MGM. He asked my mother and the head dressmaker to move with him to MGM.
Wow.
And she could walk to work. But while they were there, while I was between 1926, 1927, my mother purchased a lot a few blocks away from where we were renting, and she had a house built. The lot was about 50 by 150, and it was a short block, mostly of duplexes and a few single homes.
Okay.
So we moved into that house, but by this time, my parents got a divorce, so my mother was a single mother.
Wow.
My grandparents always lived with us. And while my mother was working, my grandparents took care of me, and I attended the Palmer School, grammar school, and my grandfather used to walk me to school, which was about four blocks away. But we walked me to school and I'd come and pick me up at the end of school.
Esther?
In a particularly good situation, it was a short block, but at one end, the transportation was the electric car called Venice Short Line.
Okay.
And on the other end of the block was a very good bus system. And so, did you have a question?
I did. Can you tell me the name of your school again?
Palms, P-A-L-M-S.
Okay.
Palms. And it was from kindergarten, and at that time I met a girl in kindergarten with whom I went through grammar school, high school, and college. So I knew her for all of our growing up years.
Oh, wow. What was her name?
Carol, C-A-R-O-L, and her last name was Shevie, S-C-H-I-E-V-E.
Nice. And you met her.
Graduated at the same time at UCLA.
Fun. You met her in kindergarten?
What?
You met her in kindergarten?
Kindergarten, yes.
Wow, that's nice.
It was a long, long friendship.
Uh-huh.
But in about 1930, 1931, a new high school was built about 5 or 6 miles away. And it started with the seventh grade, which they dropped after the first year, so it became an 8 through 12 school. But to get to it, I used the Venice Short Line, which would take me up to a place where I could get off and walk across a field to the school.
Okay.
So the transportation was easy to do.
And did you do that with Carol every day?
No, actually, she lived just a few blocks from the high school.
Okay.
I don't know how she got to the other grammar school because that was quite a distance.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay.
Anyway, we did go. And the thing I, one of the things I remember about the high school, it was a beautiful school. It was a two-story brick building, and then there was a cafeteria and a multi-use room, and then there was a building for physical education. And I remember, and I took Spanish because it helped me to learn the grammar, but in addition, my grandmother taught me to read first because we would get a Spanish newspaper, and at the bottom of the page, on one of the pages, was a strip in Spanish of Tarzan and the Apes.
Okay.
And so she taught me to, every afternoon when I got home, if there was a new cartoon, she would have me read it. So I learned to read Spanish before I actually went into high school.
Nice.
But it was 4 years. Well, it turned out to be almost 5 years because I entered in the seventh grade. And I graduated from Alexander Hamilton High School in 1937, in June of 1937. And I started college. It was a commuter college. UCLA was a commuter college. There were about 6,000 in the school.
So, Esther?
And so many of them came from East Los Angeles, which is a long commute. And the way I got to school was one of my girlfriends had a little roadster. And this friend Carol and the girl who had the car, her name was Charlotte, and the three of us would get into the front seat and drive to Westwood, to UCLA, and that was our transportation.
Hey, Esther.
Yes?
Can we back up a little bit?
Yes.
Did your mother ever have any more children?
No. She was told if she ever had another child, it would require a cesarean, and she would die.
Wow.
She would never have a second cesarean, which is curious because nowadays, it's the procedure of choice.
Right, but the risk at the time of infection was terrifying.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was very difficult.
Then in high school, what subjects did you really enjoy?
Well, I had art classes, and I had English, and I had some science, physiology and biology and social studies and history and Spanish. I don't know that there was any particular one that I enjoyed more than another. I do remember in the social studies class, it was a male teacher. At that time, the women teachers were single, and if you got married, you were fired.
Yeah.
And I remember the social studies teacher, who was a man, mentioned to us in the class that he was having trouble keeping up with expenses because he was only getting $3,000 a year.
Wow.
It was hard to make things go. So anyway, did you have another question?
Well, it's interesting, just thinking about $3,000 a year, that was a little on the top end of the average wage, the average earning back in the late 30s, early 40s.
Could be.
Huh.
Could be.
Interesting. But it was in L.A.
When my mother started working on a permanent basis at MGM, she was getting $17 a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I was also thinking, going to college, was that something that was expected of you, or was that driven from you as something you wanted to do?
Oh, no, I wanted to do. All my friends were going, and my mother was anxious that I go because she wanted me to have something to count on in the future.
Nice.
If a necessity arose. And the majors at UCLA mostly led to teaching certificates.
Right.
So she was hopeful I would get a teaching certificate to rely on if I needed it.
In those days, women's opportunities were pretty limited for teaching or...
Very limited. A lot of the students at UCLA, after they finished the 4 years, they went on to get a master's because they couldn't get any jobs.
Right. So when you headed to college as a freshman, what was there anything that was attracting you specifically in as far as an area you wanted to learn about?
Well, I was an art major and a French minor.
Okay.
So I knew Spanish already, and I wanted to learn another language. So I made French my minor, and supposedly at the end of the 4 years, and you did your practice teaching, I would do my practice teaching in French, which would have been a disaster. But I, as it turned out, I did my practice teaching in Spanish, which worked out very well.
Nice. Were you then thinking about becoming a teacher?
Well, that was the goal of that particular major. That was what you were going to get at the end of the four years or the fifth year.
Okay.
So that was where I was headed.
Okay.
It was a good thing I didn't become a teacher. But anyway, I enrolled in the French class. I was a freshman. It was September 1937. And we were seated alphabetically. We were referred to as Miss and Mister. And there was one seat empty next to me. I don't know why. Somebody dropped out. But Martin came in. And he was supposed to have graduated in June of 37. But the languages, he was an English major. And he had failed the English comprehensive, which they take at the end of 4 years.
Okay.
So he had come back to kind of fill in the time until he could take the test again. And so he signed up for French 1. So he came in after the class had started, and he looked around, and he saw a girl with the last name of L, and he thought she looked pretty good, but there was no seat next to her. So the only seat available was next to me. But he was had been in the ROTC, and he had also been on the crew rowing for the 4 years of his time at UCLA.
Okay.
And then his senior year, he'd been the varsity stroke, which didn't mean anything to me because I didn't know anything about crew. But that was his athletic history. Well, he sat down next to me, and one day he came in with the uniform of the ROTC, the joggers, the boots, the scabbard and blade, and looking, you know, very military. And he had asked me out to a couple of French movies since we were taking French. We went to a couple of French movies, and he invited me to the scabbard and blade ball. And forever, he always told about it as if I had just rolled over in the aisle with delight because I was a simple freshman and he was a senior. And I was supposed to have been overwhelmed by this invitation. But the thing is, he was a very poor dancer. It was the only dance we ever went to. But anyway.
Fill me in a little bit about this guy that comes in and sits down next to you. Where was he born and where was he from?
Okay, Martin was born in Englewood. Actually, he was born in the same hospital I was born in, Los Angeles General. His father was a veterinarian. And his father had started out with big animals. In a town called Gardena, where there were many Japanese farmers, dairy farmers, and he dealt with their horses and their cows. But then the times were tough, and so he moved to the small animal business in Englewood. He had a little hospital on the main boulevard and a house next to it, and Martin's mother, who had been raised in San Francisco, she would help him, her husband, Martin's father, with the animals, not the veterinary business, but if people brought animals in or came in to collect animals, she would help, give them their animals. And so she was right next door. And I think Martin always thought that that was what I would do, not to animals, but that I would be the little homebody.
Okay.
So, anyway, his father was a veterinarian. He had learned veterinary medicine in San Francisco, where he met Martin's mother, who had grown up in an area called Twin Peaks. And during the big earthquake in 1906, she and her family had to camp on the sidewalk while they watched the city burn.
Yeah.
But the veterinary school at that time, when she was growing up, or when my father-in-law was growing up, was in San Francisco. And he had been encouraged to do this because as a teenager, he had made his way from Tennessee to California and had worked in the Imperial Valley on a big ranch.
Wow.
Owned by a man who had quite a bit of money and who encouraged him to get a degree.
Oh, wow.
So,
what was his name?
That's why he made his way to San Francisco and took the veterinary school.
What was his name?
Clyde, C-L-Y-D-E. I think his middle name was Thomas, but the last name was Litton, L-I-T-T-O-N.
And Martin's mother?
Her name was Elsie. Elsie Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N.
Okay.
And Martin's name was really Clyde Martin Litton. His first name was really Clyde.
Yes. And so now that makes sense. He was named Clyde for his father and Martin for his mother. That's beautiful.
Right. Mm-hmm, yeah, but they ended up calling him Martin.
Okay.
And he had two sisters and a younger brother.
Esther.
He was the oldest.
Let's go back for a minute.
Yes.
Who were you named after?
Named for my mother's younger sister, who was named Esther.
Okay.
And it's E-S-T-H-E-R.
Yes.
And I was Esther Lozano Cluett.
Lozano. And where does...
L-O-Z-A-N-O, which was her maiden name.
Oh, nice. Okay. And then Cluett, how do you spell that? Thank you.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so you were mentioning that Martin had brothers and sisters?
Yes. They're all gone except his younger sister, who is in a nursing home at the moment.
Mm. And were they older or younger than him? Can you go through that again?
He was the oldest. He was the oldest.
Of how many?
And then another, a younger brother, and then a younger sister. They were first Martin, then his sister, then a brother, then a sister.
So like just like you and your no, I'm sorry, just like your mom with
yes.
with two girls and two boys. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there he is, sits down next to you, and you must have started talking, and
yes, he was very annoying because he'd reach over and write in my book, and I thought, this isn't the kindergarten.
Oh, that's funny.
But anyway, we did a date, and then he did pass the exam in the following year in 1938.
Okay.
And he went to work. His first job was in December and January and February in Arizona in a dude ranch called the Wigwam, which is near Litchfield Park, which is near Phoenix.
Okay.
And his job was to take pictures of the guests. The wigwam was owned by Goodyear, because Goodyear had large acreage of cotton, a special cotton that they used for the tires.
Oh.
And they had built this dude ranch, which anybody could go to, but it was especially convenient for Goodyear executives.
Hmm.
And in the winter, when they were back east in the cold, they would come out and spend some time in the sunny Arizona.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And Martin's job was to interview the guests and take their pictures and take pictures of the activities and send pictures of the guests to their hometown, say Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so are vacationing at the Wigwam in Arizona. And one of the guests asked Martin if he could arrange to drive him to the Grand Canyon. His lady friend was coming out from Chicago, and he wanted to take her to see the Grand Canyon. So Martin arranged for, borrowed a car, and drove the couple to the Grand Canyon, and that was his first view of the Grand Canyon.
And you hadn't seen it by then?
He had not seen it. No, he'd never been anywhere.
No, no, you.
Oh no. Oh, heavens, no.
Okay, you know, hang on a minute, Esther. Did you know, during the summers when you were in high school, did you travel out of the city at all? Did you get a chance to go up into the mountains or out to the beach?
Oh yes. I'll tell you what. My mother, who was working, would only have maybe a weekend to do something. And so I think when I was 10 years old, she took us all, my grandparents and me, on a liner that went out to Catalina.
Oh, wow.
And we stayed in a hotel, which, of course, I had never done. And it was the St. Catherine Hotel. I don't think it's there now. But the casino was being built at that time. The island belonged to Wrigley of Wrigley Gum.
Okay.
And he developed Avalon, the town, and I can still smell the wonderful fragrance of the area. And I explored the hotel, and the trip over was only 25 miles, but it took some time on the liner,
mm-hmm.
So it took all day to get there.
Wow.
Now they have something that goes faster.
Yeah.
But at that time, I was 10. And my mother and I did return there a couple of times in later years for a weekend.
Nice.
And we'd go on the glass bottom boat, and we'd, you know, see the, had a wonderful zoo. But then in addition, my mother knew that my grandparents were pretty much confined to the house all the time. So she tried to find things that they, where she could take them. And one summer, she rented a house in Balboa, Newport Beach, that area. And we were there for several days with my grandparents. And then another time, I took music lessons in the center of Los Angeles. And at the depot, at the end of the line, the depot, there was an ad for Mount Wilson and also Mount Low. We never made it to Mount Low, which was had a hotel, but we did go to Mount Wilson, which has the observatory.
Yes.
And I think it was by car that we went there, and we stayed in a little cabin.
Wow.
I was about maybe 13, like that.
Okay.
And I remember looking through the telescope and seeing the moon.
Wow.
Well, it wasn't so well. It just looked like a photograph. And I thought, you know, it was going to be something really fantastic.
Yeah.
But there was that strange feeling of being in outer space.
Nice.
And there was a large
Okay.
And there were the homes there of the astronomers. And, of course, Hubble had been there working on his experiments, and it was he, the telescope is named for him. But he started in Mount Wilson.
Right. Did you learn how to swim?
Yes, I did.
You were growing up?
I learned to swim when we went to Balboa. Yeah, I never had lessons, but I did kind of learn to swim there in that shallow water.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's so important for children to know how to swim.
Yeah. And you know, get out. Did you? I'm assuming it would have been tough for your mom to do any kind of camping or anything.
Well, we never did anything like that. We did go later in my teens. We did go to Lake Tahoe, to Emerald Bay, and I think I was maybe 17. We did manage to go to Sequoia National Park, the giant forest, and she loved the mountains and the forest, but she was not a sports person at all.
Okay.
Due to the infection that she got when I was born, she had a lot of trouble with her legs.
Mm.
She developed phlebitis.
Okay.
And she had a lot of trouble. She loved to walk, and in a higher elevation, she could walk more easily. But anyway, we did go to Sequoia. We did go to Lake Tahoe, Emerald Bay.
Did you go to Yosemite?
No. We never went to Yosemite until I was married and we took my mother there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, just trying to, you know, get a sense of you know, how much outdoor exposure you might have had growing up.
Yes. Well, she enjoyed the mountains very much and the nature and all that, but she couldn't be very active. And I never joined the Brownies or the Girl Scouts or anything. She didn't. She was very protective, and I was not allowed to do things like that. However, when I was 15, when she built the house, she also had a large two-car garage, not attached to the house, but in the back. And I think the contractor convinced her she should put a garage, but we didn't have a car. But when I was 15, the tailor with whom she worked, it was a large room that held the tailors and the milliner
mm-hmm.
and her embroidery people, knew the sheriff. And in 1935, the sheriff wanted to get rid of his Buick, which was a big four-door black Buick. And I don't know what he charged for it, but the tailor, my mother never learned to drive, but the tailor convinced my mother that she should buy that car and have me learn
wait,
to drive.
Wait. So your mom doesn't know how to drive,
and
someone she works with convinces her she needs to buy this car for you.
I didn't catch the last thing.
Well, that the friend convinces your mom to buy the car for you. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, he figured I could learn to drive.
Oh,
so
gosh.
She got a driving instructor to teach me to drive.
Wow. Nice.
And one of the first things we did when I learned to drive, about when I was 16 or 17, we drove up to San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
My mother and I, we stayed in Daly City in a motel, and by that time the Golden Gate Bridge had been built. But she asked for a driver to drive us around because I didn't trust myself in San Francisco, and I didn't know my way around. So the driver took us all over San Francisco and across the bridge, and we came back. I drove back home. We came back by way of Monterey and Pebble Beach, and not Big Sur. We got back onto the main drag.
Where was the main drag then? This is the early 1940s?
It was like 1935, 36, 37.
Okay. Where did the road go from L.A. up to San Francisco?
Well, it was called El Camino Real.
Okay.
And there was no freeway. It
All right.
And it went through, San Jose and up through the peninsula up to San Francisco.
Okay.
But it was just a four-lane road, and it was called El Camino Real. We always referred to it as El Camino.
Nice. Okay. That's pretty good. Were you a tall woman or a short woman? How did you have trouble getting to the pedals and looking out over the steering wheel?
I think so. I'm 5'3".
Okay.
Some friends used to laugh because when they saw this big black car, they could hardly find me.
Oh my gosh.
Oh. And of course, it had a clutch. You know. It was all that. And then the front seat, you could sit three people in the front seat because there was nothing to interfere with sitting in the front seat.
Nice. Nice.
But anyway.
Big giant, all the way across seat. Yeah. Yeah. Fun.
Yeah. But my mother especially wanted the car so that I could take my grandparents out. On a weekend, I could drive them to Griffith Park. I could drive them to the beach. I could, do something for them.
Nice.
To give them. My grandfather used to do the shopping, the grocery shopping. My grandmother would give him the list in Spanish, and he would go to the neighborhood grocery store, which was just a block or so away.
Okay.
And you ordered. You stood behind the counter, and the owner of the grocery store stood behind the counter, and behind him were the shelves with all the cans.
Okay.
And so you'd tell him what you wanted in the way of cans, and he would get the cans down. And I think there were obviously some fresh vegetables, so he would get the fresh vegetables. And there was a meat counter, he would get the meat. And I remember, as a special treat, my grandmother asked my grandfather to buy some filet mignon.
Wow.
And it was 25 cents a pound.
Wow.
Because ground meat was 10 cents a pound.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, he did the shop every day. He would go down with a shopping bag and do the groceries for the day. And my grandmother would start preparing the meal around 3 o'clock. And unfortunately, she never taught me to cook. She said, oh, you're going to be cooking for the rest of your life. Don't you? don't start now.
Oh, huh. Nice.
It was too bad. It was not tortillas and beans, believe me. It was a more of a European menu.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. And the washing was done out in the garage. It was a big tub in the garage, and there was a clothesline in the back. And Monday was for soaking the clothes. Tuesday was for washing the clothes and putting them out on the clothesline to dry. And Wednesday was something else, and Thursday was something else. So each day had a particular chore.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And so when you weren't at school, it sounds like you were kept busy, pretty busy with chores then.
Yes, but also in the summer school, the art teacher in high school suggested I might like to take some art lessons at an art school, which was near Westlake Park, the same place where I had grown up. There were three art schools there. There was Chouinard, Art Center, and Otis. And she suggested Chouinard. So in the summer, two or three summers, I went there in the summertime for classes and enjoyed it very much.
Nice. Nice. What was your favorite type of art?
I kind of started from scratch. I did enjoy the landscape painting very much. And I think I enjoyed that one, particular craft. The most.
Nice. Okay.
And so, anyway, in 1939, in the summer, I went to Mexico City for summer school. And because I wanted to meet some of my relatives who were there.
Nice.
My mother's relatives, my grandmother's relatives. And so I signed up for summer school for some classes, and I went with a lady who was a Spanish teacher at a private girls' school, and the owner of the private girls' school came along too. Her name was Ruby King, and she had a friend, also an adult lady. So there were two adult ladies and Mrs. Chavez and Mrs. Chavez's two teenage girls.
Huh.
So I went with them, and I roomed in a private home. I had a room in a private home along with the two adult ladies who roomed in the same house.
Okay.
And I don't know what they did with their day, but I would take the trolley car and go to the school, which was some distance from where the house where I was staying.
Okay.
And while I was there, we did manage, I don't know whether there was a bus, not a bus service, but a private car that took us, several of us, to about 30 miles north of Mexico City to Teotihuacan, which was a ruin of the Pyramid of the Sun and the Pyramid of the Moon and another building, another ancient building, and quite a few remnants of other buildings. It was a fascinating place.
Wow.
There was a small village nearby, and some little boys were selling things that they had picked up on the ground, some little carvings.
Hmm.
So we climbed up, the teenagers and I climbed up one of the pyramids, and not like the Egyptian pyramids. They were very easy to climb up. And since then, I have seen a documentary about Teotihuacan, which indicates that over the years they have done much exploration.
Yes.
And have discovered a great deal of the civilization and the buildings that were there. It was a very extensive civilization, and it covered many, many acres. And in addition, the two ladies and I did go on a private car to Cuernavaca and to Taxco.
Oh, wow.
And we stayed a couple of nights in Taxco, which was a historic town. It was an old silver town, which had been the site of the Borda mine, silver mine.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ladies took a picture of me seated in a little stucco house, a simple dwelling that was marked Humboldt House. And I didn't know at the time that it had been where Baron von Humboldt stayed during his exploration of Mexico.
Wow.
Later I found out, I've read a lot about Humboldt, and he was very upset about what he saw in the silver mine, the treatment of the miners.
Yeah.
And when he got to the United States in 1800, he met with Jefferson and told him about the mineral resources of Mexico and suggested heartily that Jefferson explore the unknown west of the United States.
Hmm.
And it was at the time that Jefferson sent Lewis and Clark in 1804 and 1805.
Nice.
Yeah. But anyway, it was curious that I was sitting in Humboldt's house.
Yeah. Did your grandmother and grandfather ever go back to Mexico to visit their...
No.
Never?
No.
Wow.
My mother never went back, and neither did my grandparents. However, my mother's brother, the older one, did go back and visit my grandfather's brothers who were still living.
Okay.
And at one time when I was a teenager, my grandfather longed to go back to see his two brothers.
Mm.
And my mother had arranged that I would take him. And so it was all set up. I was going to go and take him to see his brothers. And one of the Mexican ladies who worked for my mother said, you know, he may have trouble getting back in.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was canceled.
Wow.
But the ladies who worked with my mother were never American women. They were always Mexican women.
Wow.
Spanish-speaking women.
Huh.
It was curious because the room, the large room where she worked in the wardrobe, had all of the tailors. And she had a section for the embroidery, the work that she did. There was another section for the milliner. So there was a lot of Yiddish going on and then Spanish going on. And the working community of the studio was very cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting community, but they were the people who really made the movies. My mother had nothing to do with any of the movie stars.
Right.
But her work was with the designer, and of whom there were more than one.
Okay. I'm going to shift for a minute back to Mexico City. You're 20 or 19 or about.
I was 19.
What most inspired you about that trip to Mexico City? You came away from there. What were one or two things you brought away from that trip?
Well, I enjoyed the people, and I enjoyed the classes, the teachers of the classes in the summer school, and some of the students who were there, and I enjoyed going out to a city called Ameca, from which you could see the two volcanoes very easily.
Ah.
And I enjoyed a restaurant on the main drag of Mexico City called Sanborns. It was referred to as the House of the Tiles because it had a lot of Spanish tiles on the walls. And I enjoyed that. And another side trip, friends took me to the city of Puebla, which was historically very important. And so there were some side trips that I particularly enjoyed. And my mother's cousins took me to the Virgen de Guadalupe, the church that has the burlap with a painting of the Virgin. It's very famous in Mexico. And pilgrims come on their hands and knees to that particular little church to do homage to that particular painting.
Mm-hmm.
The strange part is that I think that Portugal has a Virgin, and of course France has a Virgin of Lourdes. I don't know which is the one in Portugal, and I think Italy has a Virgin. So everybody has a painting of the Virgin.
Mm. Nice. Yeah. Okay.
So, and of course, the trip to Taxco was really wonderful. I enjoyed that very much. It was an old colonial city.
How long were you on the trip to Mexico City and all the country around?
How did I find the area around it?
No. How long was the trip? You went down with the teachers and the.
I was there 2 months. I was 2 months. July and August.
Wow.
And when I came back. Came back on the train by myself for some reason, and it was while I was on the train in September that I heard about the Blitzkrieg.
Okay.
The entrance into Poland. And during that time when I was in college, nobody paid much attention to what was going on in Europe. Oddly enough, the political science class that I took, the professor said, the country we have to worry about is Russia.
Ah.
He didn't mention a thing about Germany.
Wow.
And all we knew about what was going on in Germany was in the Fox Movie Tone News, where we would see something about the youth camps and the gigantic audiences Hitler was getting, for his speeches.
Right.
And there was a great deal of pro-Hitler feeling in the United States at the time.
Okay.
And everybody said that there was nothing special going on. There was no criticism of it. However, when I was like a sophomore, the son of the president of Czechoslovakia came to speak, and he told us what he saw going on.
Oh, wow.
Czechoslovakia was very concerned that they were going to be next.
Yeah.
After Austria. Also, the writer Thomas Mann, M-A-N-N, German writer, spoke to us about what was going on in Europe. But unfortunately, Dr. Mann had a very thick German accent, so I couldn't understand what he was saying.
Ah, okay.
But we knew that they were all saying things to try to make us aware of what was going on in the rest of the world.
Interesting. Yeah.
Peace demonstrations off campus. I never attended them. But anyway, in 1939, when the Blitzkrieg happened, we were suddenly awakened to what was happening. And in the Fox Movie Tone News, then we saw a little bit of what had occurred in Poland and in Czechoslovakia. And Austria, of course, had welcomed Hitler. They thought, oh, it's going to be just fine. But from Austria, he went to Czechoslovakia, and then the Blitzkrieg in 39 in Poland.
Yeah.
But so, they were pretty much ignorant.
By 39, you're in college.
Yes.
And you're dating Martin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then from his job in Arizona, he went to work at 39 when I was in Mexico. He was working at the Los Angeles Times. And his job was in the basement. He said he was digging up the glue that kept dropping off of the presses and where the newspapers came rolling down bundled and ready to be distributed. And so anyway, in 39, that was it. And then in 40, I was trying to think.
So,
I guess he was working, he gradually worked up to the classified ads. He was writing classified ads. And since he had been in ROTC, he was called in July 41. And he was stationed in the Hamilton Air Force Base in the Bay Area, which is in Marin County.
Okay.
And he invited his mother and me to come up. No. He invited my mother and my cousin and I to come up and see him at Hamilton Air Force Base, which we did. I could drive.
Okay.
And we drove up to see him while he was there. And that was July 41.
Took the Buick up there.
What?
You drove the big black Buick.
Yeah. And so anyway, he was assigned to a fighter group, a fighter plane group. And he wanted desperately to learn to fly. He wanted so much to learn to fly. So he applied for the fighter group, but was rejected because he's colorblind. And so then the whole group was sent back east to Arkansas, Louisiana, and North Carolina for what they called Army Games.
Okay.
And they came back just before the 1st of December, 1941. And that was when he invited his mother and me to come and see him in Oakland. And at that time when I saw him, he proposed, so I accepted. And then, of course, Pearl Harbor happened a week or so after that. And he saw a notice. Since they wouldn't let him in flying the fighter planes, he saw a notice about glider pilots. They needed volunteers for learning to fly gliders. So he applied and was accepted. But and the training was in Texas. It was in Waco and Dalhart and even in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay.
And we were engaged, and at that time, I don't know whether we were when we were engaged or after we were married, but we purchased a lot in an area of Los Angeles called Brentwood. And Brentwood had very wealthy homes, but it also had very modest homes. I think O.J. Simpson had a home in Brentwood.
Okay.
And Shirley Temple had a home, but the lot that we purchased was at the end of a street that went up around elevation about 600 feet. It wasn't very high, but it was lovely. It was the lot that we purchased was the last one on the street.
Mm.
And then there was a middle-sized Cape Cod house that was the last house on that street.
Okay.
And then our lot. So I'm trying to think.
You know what? We've been yik-yakking for about an hour. Maybe it's a good time here in 1941 to wrap up part one here, and we'll yik-yak again in part two. Does that sound like a plan?
Well, that sounds just fine, except I should shorten it because it's...
You shouldn't. No.
Well, he had a chance to, after he finished the training in the glider pilot, he said, I have 2 weeks off, I'm coming home, so we'll get married. So with just a week's notice, we were married on October the 27th, 1942, and our honeymoon took place, and the streets were blacked out, the cars were blacked out, and all that, and we were married in Englewood Church across the street from his mother, from where his parents lived, and we spent our first night at the Riverside Mission Inn, and the next day we made our way through the desert, Amboy Crater and Needles and all that, and we ended up at night quite late at the El Tovar Hotel in the Grand Canyon.
Nice.
And the next day, we, with a car, we cruised around South Rim and then started off north because he was going to let me off at Colorado Springs and send me home on the train while he went on up to Denver. So we made our way.
Okay, Esther, wait. I have now a bunch of questions about 1941 before we get to 1942.
Oh, okay.
So I tell you what, why don't we wrap this up here, and we're going to come back and pick up 1941.
Okay, well, I hope I can remember. I'll have to make some notes.
You have been doing an amazing job. I'm just tickled. If you can hold the line for a minute.
Yes.
This is going to conclude part one.
Well, I hope I didn't go into too much detail.
Oh, you're doing fine. You're doing just fine. and so this will conclude our part one oral history interview with Esther Litton. My name is Tom Martin. Today is the 22nd of May, 2020. And Esther, thank you so much.
Just let me know when you want to start again.
Okay, hang on a second.